a news update for October 1st, 2022 on the Saturday morning edition, part 4, or part 5, broadcasting on both Sirius XM and also terrestrial satellite radio networks, and broadcasting on all podcasting platforms where you consume or get your content from. And you can find us on platforms like Anchor.fm, Stitcher.fm, PocketCast.fm, Applecast, and many, many more. Our podcast name is, just type it in your search bar in your favorite browser or player. That's Top Headlines, National and International News Stories. Okay, we'll be back with hour number 5. Stay tuned, folks. I love you.
To be Supreme Court justice in a public debate on the issue of collectivism versus individualism, and proceeded as a first-year law student to mop the floor with the dude. He was an unbelievable intellect.
And in the free market economy, he literally took over the whole candy market. They go, oh, he's a candy maker. Like, that puts him down that a super competitive market, he could dominate it.
Yeah, so he invented things like the Sugar Daddy, Junior Mints, and was just an unbelievably self-made man. Now, this is what gave him the connection. So he was on the chairman of the board of directors for an organization called NAM, the National Association of Manufacturers. This was in the 50s, the real who's who of the true American capitalist. I'm not talking about the international financial class. I'm talking about the ones that, you know, are tied to the prosperity of the nation. And because he was so well respected, that's what gave him the opportunity to get these men together. And really, you know, between 1958 and when it's founded, in 1964, when Barry Goldwater pinched the nomination from Nelson Rockefeller, I mean, we had huge growth in that.
And that's when they totally turned against you, when you guys warned the Vietnam War was a fraud, all of it. I mean, and then the whole system turned against you like they've done InfoWars.
Well, yeah, and what's fascinating, Alex, is we've actually been able to track back the initial orders that came out of the Communist Party, and literally the exact same story that came out of the Communist press was then published in Newsweek and Time and so on and so forth, literally within, you know, a couple days going forward. It's amazing that you can see how this operates, and it's absolute treachery.
Well, what, like, I want to get into modern stuff, but those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Obviously, you guys weren't defeated, but you were pushed underground to a certain extent. Imagine if Robert Welch and others would have been successful, we would have turned this tide back. We'd probably be on Mars right now.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Robert Welch understood that the cause of liberty was the purest and most sweetest pursuit, that all people, it doesn't matter what color you are, what religion you are, if there's a free market competitive economic system in a country that where government exists to protect our God-given rights, man, it's unlimited what our growth and potential is.
All right, I've been babbling here. We got 15 minutes, 20 minutes left. What do you want to hit next? Current events, what's happening?
Well, here's where it really comes into play, Alex. People understand that we can't just be moaning and groaning about this stuff. We need to get to work. So here's the thing. We're going to have, you know, campaigns where we're going to have to push election integrity. And I mean real election integrity, not these phony bills that the Republicans are laying out. Stuff that gets rid of the machines, where it's paper ballots, where there's some sort of control over the voter list. What people don't understand is that the voter list now, it's like a game of three-card Monty that's going on with these Secretary of States. So we've got to pass laws and really get through legislation to get that done. So we can use the Constitution to make that happen and to start making those changes. We can use things like the doctrine of nullification to protect the Second Amendment. Because if a state says, hey, we're going to nullify all federal firearms laws in our state, it doesn't matter what Joe Biden and his New World Order commanders, push through.
Sure, just like they have sanctuary cities, we can have liberty cities.
Absolutely. Let's explore liberty. So here's the thing. What my recommendation is, if you mean business, if you want to be part of an organization that is going to give you the absolute best information going, go to JBS.org and sign up. They will put you in touch with a local field officer, guys like me all over the country. We have some of the most unbelievable men and women as professionals that can put you in a specific action agenda chapter where you're going to be doing things, where you're actually going to be making a difference and pushing the purpose of liberty, not just as an academic exercise, but as a specific political pursuit. We're going to use the sort of things that we're going to see from Machiavelli or Sun Tzu, and all of these things get put into play. We're going to make sure that we're a politician's worst nightmare and a statesman's best friend.
Let's talk about the Great Reset, where the New World Order is right now, the UN Master Plan for Humanity, the Chinese opening offices all over the U.S. and Canada. I read 30 years ago, John Birch Society warning of international police. Now it's here.
Yeah, no question about it. And we see that with the FBI, don't we? I mean, what a flipping sham that was. I work with a lot of people up in Michigan, and the whole, phony abduction of Governor Whitmer. I mean, what an embarrassment these people have become. And really, you know what? They're thugs and they're murderers at this point. That's what we're dealing with. That's what the FBI is. And they've weaponized the systems. You know, look at the doctors that dealt with this COVID stuff, and all the licensing systems were weaponized, you know, against them. You said ivermectin. They're coming to pull your medical license. You know, people wonder why there aren't many good lawyers out there that are liberty-loving lawyers. Because they already had all their licenses pulled. Because you start saying things that aren't part of the establishment set, baby, you're cut off. And that's how it works. That's what we're dealing with. So we've got to fight back. The war is now and people are dying. We've got to get in the fight, Alex.
How would you describe, Robert Owens, the John Birch Society, the current battlescape? Well, the New World Order, the populist movement, are they winning? Are we losing? Or how would you describe what's happening worldwide?
You know what? It's like the sword of Damocles is hanging in the balance right now, Alex. It's easy to get down and say that, hey, they're cleaning our clocks and we're about to go under. And I'm not going to suggest that that isn't, 100% possible. But I got to tell you what, I spend a lot of time traveling around, Ohio and Michigan, Pennsylvania, certainly, but also around the rest of the country. The amazing strength of the patriots that are out there. There's a lady in Michigan, Linda Wilder. This lady is on fire for liberty. And, you know, it's just, you would see this little old lady is what the world sees, but she's a powerhouse. She's amazing.
That's right. Well, no, right? People've never been more awake.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We've got a project right now, and I'm looking at it, and I've got a member of mine, a white Jewish fella, and he's sitting right next to a black evangelical pastor, and they're working together for the cause of liberty. Because you know what? If you love liberty, it doesn't matter what color or religion you are, it's going to benefit you.
I think the globalists are in deep trouble. Their whole vaccine push is falling apart.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's amazing how thoroughly people can be snowed in this thing. And I think what people have to realize is that the mass of people, they're never going to really believe or be involved in anything. What we need to hit is the small core that matters. If you look at the foundation of our country, right, the Sons of Liberty, the committees of correspondence, this was not like huge numbers of
3%. This was Stay there. We'll be right back. Live on your feet. Don't die on your knees. I'm Alex Jones, your host. I want to thank all the listeners that have gone to SaveInfoWars.com to make straight donations for my legal defense, because the bankruptcy court says I have to pay 40% legal fees. I'm almost out of money. Thank you for the donations you've made. SaveInfoWars.com. We are almost over the hump right now. Our credibility is exploding. But we need your support at SaveInfoWars.com. We have the biggest sale of the year so far, the InfoWars store super sale going up to 50% off on so many great items like X3, all three types of good iodine, the missing link in your body, so good for your libido, your stamina, your energy, your immune system. X3 back in stock, 50% off InfoWarsStore.com. So Robert Owens of the John Birch Society, it's just, it's crazy to know the globalists had these plans 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And then to see them build them and launch them, it seems to me easy. People would rally and say no to this. But that's why they're censoring us. The internet's saying nobody knows who first coined it is. If the situation was hopeless, the propaganda would not be necessary. So as negative as things are, we got Bolsonaro, we got Giorgia Meloni in Italy, we've got the new Canadian leader set to beat Trudeau, who's totally anti-New World Order. I mean, you look all over the world, we are rising right now, but that concerns me because the deep state globalists are going to throw out everything they've got. They're going to pull out all the stops. What are you concerned about? What do you see happening?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got a 12-year-old son, Alex. The war in Europe and, you know, the span that's looking for, the possibility of the draft being reinstated, that my son, by the time he's 18, is going to be sent off to some UN meat grinder. That's what personally has me terrified. That's one of the things that puts my feet on the floor early every morning and saying, let's get to the fight, because it's ugly. No, I think we're going to see hyperinflation just absolutely continue to rock the economy. I think that there's an absolute war on farmers that's going on, and that is going to be absolutely devastating. We're going to have some real food shortage issues and problems that come into play. And, you know, those that don't have the ability or don't already have a sort of farm-to-table setup, they should probably start looking into that right now. So I would say, you know, financial insecurity, food insecurity, and war, well, those are the three big ones for me, Alex, and it's ugly.
You know, I've interviewed him probably 30 times over the years. He hadn't been on in 5-6 years, so I should get him on. Who's the former editor of The New American? What's his name, whose parents were World War II vets, and it was in Vietnam, and he thought they were crazy about the New World Order, and he researched and found they were right. What's his name?
Jack McManus was the publisher for a long time of The New American. We've had so many just absolutely tremendous people on staff. That one in particular is not ringing a bell offhand. Gary Allen has been on staff. We've had just tremendous writers that have gone forward. G. Edward Griffin was a major author for us. And of course, he wrote Creature from Jekyll Island, the probably definitive exposure of the Federal Reserve.
Oh, yeah. That guy's been fighting since the 60s as well.
Yeah, well, and that was through the John Birch Society, of course. You know, he was on staff with Robert Welch, and Robert Welch was the one that encouraged him to start writing books. And of course, the research for the Creature from Jekyll Island came out of the John Birch Society Research House, as did None Dare Call It a Conspiracy, and so many other books that really completely changed so many people's understanding.
Well, that's right, and Welch saw it all. How did Welch see this ending?
So what he saw this ending is this way, that we have to build a leadership system so that in the end game, when these people are really revealed and it becomes obvious to so many in the public what's going on, we've got to be there. Welch's idea of the John Birch Society is it would provide the leadership to take all these people that were freaking out and waking up and realizing that they're in panic and make sure that they adhere to constitutional principles, that they have solid intelligence information about who the enemy is, so they're not chasing their tails in the process. And most importantly, and I think this is critical, Alex, to do so in a way that honors God. Because if this victory is going to be realized, it's going to have God's handwriting all over it. And it's important that we conduct ourselves in such a way that it would honor God in the process. If we're going to expect them to bless us, Alex, let's honor them in the process.
I agree. The positive note is the hottest thing in the world is exposing the WFF, the New World Order, Bill Gates. Bill Gates puts a video up, he'll get a half a million negative comments, 1,000 positive. The globalists aren't doing too well.
Yeah, they're getting hammered and they're getting exposed, Alex, and their policies are evil, and even the churches are starting to wake up and realize that, you know, we've see this issue in Michigan with this horrific abortion construct they're trying to enshrine in the Constitution there. And the churches are finally waking up to realizing this is evil. But, you know, Alex, I look at it this way. We have the opportunity to be the catalyst for a third great awakening in America. And if we can make that happen, man, I'll tell you what, we're going to have liberty restored. We're going to have prosperity at levels that people can't even imagine.
And Robert, you're saying positive things now. What would the New World Order look like in a few minutes if they succeeded?
Well, I'll tell you what, it'll look an awful lot like, 1984. Orwell had a first row seat at how the Fabian socialists were. Go back, you can even get 1984 as an audiobook for those that aren't readers. You want to know what it looks like? That's exactly what it'll look like.
All right, he was at the highest levels with the communists and the OSS and the propaganda, and he turned against it.
Absolutely. He had a first row seat on all of it, and he knew exactly what was going on. And that's why his books, that's why Animal Farm, that's why 1984, so amazingly profound works. And here's the thing, and this is what I'll tell you, the most unbelievable members of the John Birch Society are naturalized citizens that came from communist countries, because they know it's a lie. These communists lie. They lie. And until people realize that it's a lie, they can't see through it. But once you understand that communism is a lie built on a lie, built on a lie, such that any vestige of truth is completely eviscerated, that's where we need our people to be.
All right, powerful. What do you think of Trump, DeSantis? What do you think is going to happen in the midterms coming up as well?
Well, I think that DeSantis has an awful lot of links to the globalists. Quite honestly, I'm not super impressed. God bless Trump. When I heard his inauguration speech, Alex, it gave me chills down my spine listening to that inauguration speech. It was amazing. And the one from Italy too. Oh my gosh, it's awesome. But here's the thing. When he's appointing people like H.L. McMaster to be national security advisor, like that dude still had, horns and a tail on. Like, come on. Like, what are we doing here? So hopefully people like, if we're going to see a resurgence of Trump, it will be in a manner in which he's going to shed himself of any pretense of trying to deal with these people, because I think he thought he could deal with the devil. And I've got to tell you what, Trump's an amazing personality. Nobody deals with the devil and wins. It's a surefire loser.
That's right. All right, Robert Owens, website jbs.org, Constitution Corner. Thank you so much, sir.
God bless you, Alex.
Appreciate you, brother. All right, Mike Adams on world famine, global collapse, all admitted. It's hard to believe we're here, but it's really happening. We should get ready for this. Mike Adams is about to take over. Again, I'm so thankful to viewers and listeners, so thankful to this crew, so thankful to everybody. We've done so much together. We're in a major fight with the deep state. I keep coming to you asking for support. You've really been coming through, but God keeps me humble, always right on the edge of the black and the red there. So please go to InfoWarsStore.com, because these are products you need. We have the InfoWars Store Super Sale right now, up to 50% off on products like X3, Vitamin Mineral Fusion, DNA Force Plus, the Vitamin D3 Gummies with Calcium, the Super 1100% Strength Vitamin C Organic with the Zinc and the Rose Hips. That's all 50% off. InfoWarsStore.com. Make the commitment to fund the InfoWar. Thanks for coming through. Make the commitment down to get products you need to boost your immune system, be healthier and happier. Please now, don't wait. Go to InfoWarsStore.com and support the InfoWar today. Get a signed copy or unsigned copy. The signed copies are a fundraiser on the Great Reset and the War for the World, often on number one book in the world right now, at InfoWarsStore.com, or get the Teddy Roosevelt limited edition coin. More than half have been sold at 1776coin.com. Mike Adams takes over in 2 minutes.
We'll be right back with Mike Adams.
Why don't we talk about cryptocurrency? Because one of the ways that you encourage your audience
show today,
Mike Adams,
and I've got a bombshell guest to bring you, and also I think a bombshell critical analysis for your survival of what's coming, because of course Hurricane Ian has just rampaged through Florida. It's affecting even the phosphate fertilizer supply That is half of that supply for North America, and 12% of the supply for the entire world comes out of one company in Central Florida. And we're going to talk about that and tell you what that means on top of the nitrogen fertilizer shutdown due to the sabotage explosion of the Nord Stream pipelines and shutting off of Gazprom natural gas and so on. But folks, that's just the beginning. That's only one storm of a much bigger storm that's coming, or really a series of storms that are coming. And what you're going to learn here in the next hour here on the Alex Jones Show with my special guest, Michael Yon, who is an international war correspondent and analyst, we're going to bring you, I think, an analysis that you have not heard before of a supercritical, vulnerable breaking point of Western civilization. And it involves one large chemical conglomerate company that's based out of Germany. And the name of that company is BASF, B-A-S-F. And we're looking at whether BASF is going to be able to survive this storm, and then what happens to the Western world if BASF goes offline. I believe that you're looking at mass famine across not just Western Europe, but also increased food scarcity in the United States, Canada, and frankly, all Western nations. I think you're looking at an energy catastrophe across Western Europe, but also much higher energy prices in the United States as well. We are looking at mass bankruptcy of almost every consumer, every person in a Western nation is not going to be able to afford to even purchase the basics moving forward, just the basics like food and heat. We're already seeing a plummeting in the purchases of things like Nike shoes. Nike stock price plummeted. Why? Well, because they have too many shoes. People aren't buying them. When you're trying to put food on the table and not starve to death, you don't need a $150 pair of Nikes. You know, you're gonna go to Walmart and spend $20 on just regular sneakers. And that's happening across cosmetics, fashion, travel, all kinds of discretionary income is being now redirected into critical supplies just to stay alive. And this trend is going to continue quite dramatically. You're gonna see plummeting, well, you're already seeing it in luxury housing, also luxury vehicles. Those sales will continue to fall as people cannot afford what they hoped, that the lifestyle they had hoped to achieve, a lifestyle that was based on easy money and artificially low interest rates and lots of money printing and stimulus money and handouts all through COVID, that's come to an end. It's going to be a very tough road ahead for people who do not prepare. So what I'm going to do with you today here with my special guest, Michael Yon, will be joining us after this coming break. We're gonna not only lay out the vulnerabilities of Western civilization and what's coming, but also try to give you as much as we can a blueprint of how you can survive this. And it is absolutely clear to me that not only was, of course, the vaccine a bioweapon that is killing children every day, as well as, you know, athletes and people of all ages, frankly, but every day there's another, you know, high school age kid that is dead after taking the vaccine. That's a bioweapon. But the bioweapon didn't have the full effect that the globalists intended. It didn't kill off people quickly enough. They did not get enough obedience to the vaccine. So now they're going to pull the strings on the global economy. And that's what the sabotage of Nord Stream 1 and 2 was all about. This is a takedown of the civilian infrastructure that keeps human civilization alive, that allows you to eat, to heat your homes, to have a job, to pay your bills. It's all being ripped out from underneath us, a giant global rug pull that's designed to take down human civilization. So we're gonna come back after this short break, just 1 minute break, with Michael Yon. Of course, I'm Mike Adams. We're gonna break it down for you, tell you what's coming, and do our best to show you how to navigate this and not die from this global genocide taking place. Stay with us, we'll be right back after this break. All right, welcome back, folks. Mike Adams here, fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show on this September 30th, 2022. About to be joined here by a special guest, Michael Yon. He is an international war correspondent and analyst, and he and I interviewed him for the first time, I guess about a week ago, as he was traveling through Germany, and he speaks German. He was able to see what's happening on the ground. It is extraordinary. It is horrifying what is coming. And so he and I had a lot of offline conversations sharing intel and information about what's coming. So what we're going to do here is bring him on and then sort of make public some of our private conversations, or at least the conclusions that we shared. Mr. Michael Yan, thank you for joining me today from Europe. It's an honor to have you on, sir.
Thanks, Mike. It's a great honor to come on. I'm actually in Dublin now. As you know, I've left the mainland Europe. I was over in Mexico actually 3 months ago, and I saw that the Dutch farmers were starting to block the streets and that sort of thing. So I was down in Mexico watching the migration, quote unquote, actually invasion into Texas at Eagle Pass. It's unbelievable. So I spent 2 weeks just on the Mexican side alone out there watching it. And I saw the farmers acting up. I jumped on the airplane and flew to Netherlands. And from there, I've been, you know, all over Germany and Austria, Hungary, Czech Republic, Belgium, other places, Luxembourg, watching what's unfolding. And as you can see, the energy issue is a kill shot. We need that. It's not just energy. It's not just electricity. It's not just that. We need natural gas, period. Because as you well know, because you've talked about it for a long time, the Haber-Bosch process is what's required to turn natural gas or coal gas into ammonia fertilizers, right? And so, and that's been going on at Ludwigshafen, Germany, since roughly 1915, due to, as you've talked about many times on your shows, Fritz Haber, the German chemist who first came up with the process, and then Carl Bosch, who took it industrial and took it to industrial scale there at Ludwigshafen and at BASF, or BASF. And now BASF, I've been there twice in the last couple months. They are they depend on the natural gas coming from Russia, and that gas is now cut off. So Ludwigshafen, I've been saying for. Go ahead, sir.
Let me jump in here and explain something. And by the way, you're joining us from Europe. There is a slight delay. I apologize if I'm speaking over you, and our audience, just bear with us, because you know we're on two different continents here. But this is critical. So what Michael just explained is absolutely crucial to understand. BASF uses an enormous amount of natural gas. About 60% of the natural gas they use is for their own energy, which is heat. They have to heat, for example, for the Haber-Bosch process, they have to heat and create pressure in order to create ammonia out of natural gas and atmospheric nitrogen. But the other 40% of what they use natural gas for is for the hydrogen element. In other words, the hydrocarbons get broken apart and they have to strip off that hydrogen in order to make ammonia, which is NH3. The H is the hydrogen from the hydrocarbons. So what you just said is key, Michael. You can't generate ammonia or fertilizer or polyethylene or resins. You can't generate that from solar power or wind power or hydropower or any other so-called green power source. You must have hydrocarbons, which is HC, hydrogen carbon. If you don't have the elements, you don't have modern civilization, period. So with that said, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to make sure our audience understands the basic chemistry behind why we have to have these elements. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh yeah, it's so important that I did, Jordan Peterson invited me on. I did 2 hours with him on a show, and then he asked to spend 2 days with me over in Netherlands, which we just did last week. I mean, that's how important this is. Jordan Peterson, you know, I took him out to farmers. We talked about BASF. We talked about Haber-Bosch process. We had dinner with a CEO of a major chemical company that he's retired now recently, and they made ammonia, and he gave us a huge briefing on it. As you can see, as this ammonia runs out, these ammonia-based fertilizers, urea, ammonium nitrate, and all this, as these things run out, we're going to go basically a global Sri Lanka here. I mean, we're going to have a situation where famine will be on a scale that has never been seen before in human history. That's just how the math is working out. Of course, we don't know exactly how the math is working out because we don't know all the inputs. But what we do know is it appears that about 70% of the ammonia production in Europe from 26 different plants is now offline. But that number is clearly increasing. Talking with various people in the chemical industry, it's quite clear that that there's going to be high risk of famine in Europe itself, not just Africa. People keep saying Africa. They don't know what they're talking about. They're not paying attention. It could actually happen in Europe by late 2023, if not certainly by late 2024. Because as you know, this has a long flash to bank. Go ahead, sir.
The Europeans may end up fleeing to Africa to try to find something to eat. That's how bad this could get. I mean, you're going to have reverse migration here probably in 2023 and beyond. But I want you to speak to how critical BASF is for the supply of industrial chemicals that power all of industry across Western Europe, because you and I were talking privately, and I think that you told me in one of our conversations that you were meeting with either a former BASF executive or a current one who said they make 45,000 different chemicals, including resins and, you know, the polyethylene chemicals. We're talking about glues, textiles, medicines, adhesives, antibiotics, sterilants, all kinds of things. Is that the right number, about 45,000 chemicals that they make?
That's actually what somebody at BASF told me. The one that I had dinner with was a separate CEO with, Jordan Peterson and quite a few others. I'm talking with people every day, actually. But when I was at BASF recently, the guy that actually gave us the tour said 45,000 chemicals. I said, 45,000? You mean 4,500 or 45,000? And he said, 45,000. I said, that's staggering. I don't even know that many words in all the languages I can speak. So, I mean, that's a lot of chemicals. Anyway, whatever those chemicals are, we know one of the most important ones is from the Haber-Bosch process. And also, we see right now, the car factories like BMW and others in Europe, there's no way they're going to stay open. They're going to close.
Yes. I've seen warnings from metals smelting organizations talking about, quote, permanent deindustrialization of Western Europe. It's not like, oh, we're going to shut down for the winter and then restart in the spring. They're saying this is going to disappear for generations if we can't keep this online. And yet, if you don't mind, repeat what you told me. I think one of the people you met with said that there's no way that BASF can continue to function beyond perhaps the next few months. Is that about right, or can you clarify that?
That's about right. The BASF has actually said in public statements, I track everything they say, everything that comes out daily. That's one of the first things I read in the morning. I mean, they've said BASF, because as you know, Germany itself is not going to have enough natural gas and other energy sources to even heat Germany through this winter. It looks like they're going to run out of energy, enough energy to keep things going. At latest by February is what it looks like, but I'm thinking probably earlier just based on this and that. Let's see. But the bottom line is, if they don't even have enough energy to heat homes, they're cutting down forests across Germany. It's unbelievable. I mean, I just drove probably a thousand miles between driving over to Czech Republic and back from Hungary to Germany and all over Ludwigshafen, and I'm watching forests cut down all over Germany. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm in Ireland now. They're cutting down forests in Lithuania and sending those forests here. And likewise, Poland.
Well, it's the new green movement of Europe. Yeah, I mean, you're not allowed to use natural gas, so I guess they're just going to clear cut all the forests and call it green. I mean, that's the insanity of the situation.
And remember what we were talking about yesterday, too, Mike. They're cutting down the green trees. Those green trees are not going to burn very well. I mean, we were talking about that last night, privately. As you know, it usually takes a couple of years for the wood to cure if you're just going to set it in the sunlight. But at this point, it's going to be green trees and it's going to be a very smoky Germany.
All right, Michael, we're about to go to break here. Stay with us. We'll be right back, folks, with Michael Yon with more details about the potential of BASF cratering and bringing down Western European industry with it. I'm Mike Adams on the Alex Jones Show. We'll be right back. All right, we continue our conversation right now with war correspondent Michael Yon. His website is michaelyon.com, and that's Y-O-N. For those of you listening just on the radio, you can think of it as the first half of the word yonder, I suppose. michaelyon.com. Hope you don't mind me saying that. Michael, just remind people how to spell your last name correctly there. But thank you for joining us. It's already a fascinating conversation. Let's continue. What are your comments on the implications now for Western European industry if BASF goes down And we know, by the way, I've seen in articles where BASF says that a lot of their facilities have not ever shut down since the 1960s. And they've even warned, for example, in a Guardian article, that if they shut them down, they don't even know if they can ever get them back online again or what's going to break in that process. Can they get the parts? Do they have to custom make the parts? I mean, if they shut down, what happens? Your analysis, Michael.
Yeah, interestingly, BASF, BASF, made their own word up called Verbund. Verbund in German means like it's an integrated system where everything works together, like our bodies, like a biological system. When you go to that plant, it's 10 square kilometers. It's absolutely massive, right? So I was there, you know, last month or so, touring around inside. It's unbelievable. And so that word, Verbund, I asked one of the BASF guys, I said, this is a great word. I'm going to start using this. I've never heard it before. Where did it come from? He said, we made it at BASF to describe how our processes work, to describe how we bring in the energy, bring in the inputs, and do all these processes and try to waste as little as possible to make sure that every little effluent, every little off gas, every little thing gets added to some product, right? And so that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the breakdown of a complex system. And so, which is what's happening globally as well, right? And it's happening at the national level, or let's say the EU level in Europe, and it's happening at the national level in Germany. And that's why I've been saying to people, watch Germany to see what's gonna happen with the EU, and watch BASF to see what's gonna happen with Germany. So keep your eyes on BASF. When you see BASF having problems, you know Germany's basically having a heart attack. And so
what do you think happened in the minds of BASF executives at the moment that the Nord Stream pipelines were blown up? I mean, weren't those pipelines what BASF was largely counting? I know that's not the only source of natural gas for BASF, but surely, I mean, Nord Stream 1 was one of the major sources, was it not? What are the implications, in other words, of the Nord Stream pipeline sabotage, which may take years to repair, if ever? What are the implications for BASF?
Lethal. Lethal implications for the company. Now, there is plenty of natural gas in Europe, for instance, at Groningen in Netherlands. And I'm talking with people, I'm seeing chats come in right now on it from members of parliament and that sort of thing over in Netherlands. I just spent, you know, quite a bit of time over in Netherlands. There's a lot of natural gas in Netherlands right next door to Germany. But the Greens doing their green stuff, along with the World Economic Forum, the globalists, all the infrastructure is there, and they're already pumping some gas, right? All they have to do is turn the valves a little bit more, and there'll be plenty of gas to keep BASF going. It's not even coming up in conversations. Likewise, over in the UK, they've got a lot of gas in the UK sitting in the ground, right? So this is my paradigm is one that I'm constantly readjusting my paradigm so that they're predictive. If you ever find yourself surprised, which we all do at times, that means your paradigms are off, right? If you're surprised that the southern border of the United States is being invaded, that's because your paradigm is off. We're being invaded because we're being destroyed, right? Likewise with Europe. I don't believe they're just going to open Groningen. I don't believe in Netherlands, the natural gas deposits, because in my paradigm, which is turning out to be very predictive, and it's not leaving me, so I've been saying, watch Nord Stream 1 for potential sabotage. Of course, it happened to Nord Stream 1 and 2, and I would say now, watch Yamal pipeline for Russia just cutting it off or somebody else sabotaging it, and watch the Norwegian flows. There's multiple flows from Norway. All are critical. I think one by one, you're going to start to see these oil pipelines, these natural gas pipelines, undersea cables, and other infrastructure. Everything's now on the menu. And under my paradigm, the globalists are committing, I'm not even going to call it a genocide because it's way bigger than that, a megacide. I mean, the death toll from these famines alone can easily be in the billions, not millions, not hundreds of millions, way over a billion. In fact, at this point, I'm not sure how we're even going to get out of it without going to that level. And Americans who think this cannot happen in the United States are simply not paying attention. You know, Mike, you've talked about it before. It can happen in America.
The wipeout that's coming to Western Europe because of this energy shutdown, you really nailed a critical point there, Michael. And by the way, for our audience, if they haven't ever seen your interviews before, you are an extremely well-read person. You know, you've read dozens of books just on famine and pestilence and pandemics and so on. I want to ask you about that in a second. But what people need to understand is that this is a man-made crisis. Okay, just like you said, Michael, they could turn on other natural gas fields in the Netherlands or even other places across Europe. There's plenty of energy in Europe, but the political class, they want the people to suffer, and they want to destroy the ability for people to feed themselves, to grow food, to heat their homes, to have electricity, to power their cities and so on. And so this is a global war on the infrastructure of civilians across the world, you know, right now targeting Western Europe, but this is also happening, frankly, everywhere else, or almost everywhere, maybe not in Russia, but it's happening in the United States, it's happening in Canada, it's happening, you know, in Australia and so on. But this is an attack on the civilian infrastructure. It's like, not only did they not even, the globalists didn't really technically declare war against us, they're waging a covert war and just trying to starve everybody out while pretending that they have the solutions in their world of green energy. It's completely insane. Your thoughts on that, Michael?
Right. I mean, this is a comprehensive war. You see, for instance, in the United, we have a bad crop this year in the United States. A lot of it's due to drought, of course. And if we have this rail strike, hopefully the rail strikes will not go in the United States. But the rail strike at this time, right when it's time for harvest, again, this can be catastrophic for the United States. And so all of these things are additive, all these different pressures, whether it's the droughts, whether it's floods in Pakistan, all these things are adding up. Normally, we're quite resilient because we are quite resilient. But as we keep getting kicked in the legs and chopped down and nobody's rising up at this point, no serious uprising, we're heading into massive amounts of warfare across the world. Remember, these three things go together: pandemic, famine, war. If you get a big pandemic, you always get a famine and a war. If you get a big war, you get famine and pandemic. It's the triangle of death. And turn these flat, the tent pole of that, human osmotic pressure, is migration. The human osmotic pressure, the push and pull of migration. When you get a big war, famine, pandemic, and those three come together, right in the Bible. You know, I said this in many interviews.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Michael. We're going to go to break here real quick. But when we come back, I want to ask you about the phosphate fertilizer industry in Florida and how that's been impacted by this hurricane and supply chain disruptions, much more. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, continuing with our huge news today. Believe me, stay tuned here. There's a lot more coming. Let me give out some websites. Our guest right now is Michael Yon, Y-O-N, and his website is michaelyon.com. My website's naturalnews.com. You probably know that. I'm also posting now on band.video. So every one of my daily situation update podcasts is appearing on band.video, usually by around noon central time. I want to thank InfoWars for providing that platform. And also, by the way, folks, none of this conversation wouldn't even be happening without the existence of InfoWars. So support InfoWars. I think the URL is saveinfowars.com if you want to make a donation to help keep this platform on the air. Because we, the independent media, we are months, if not years, ahead of the mainstream media time and time and time again. And it's people like my guest right now, Michael Yon, who sees 6 months out or a year out or more, just like Alex Jones saw 5-10 years out about what was coming. And we have been proven right again and again and again about the vaccines, about the bioweapons, about money printing, everything you can imagine, about rigged elections. And now we are warning you right now today with my guest, Michael Yon, famine is coming worldwide. Famine is coming. Famine is coming, folks. Do not forget that you're not going to be able to just go to the grocery store and buy what you used to buy with the selection you used to have or the prices you used to have. And by the way, I predict a massive explosion in small-scale farming all across the world, because suddenly home gardening or home farming is going to pay off big time in terms of cost savings compared to, or even the supply chain of food not being available. You're going to be able to grow for a fraction of what you would pay at the store. Michael, bringing you back in, I know we're going to talk about Florida here in a second, but Just what are your comments on what I just said? Do you think that people are going to turn to small-scale gardening and farming in the spring?
I think a lot already are, not enough yet. Of course, I grew up gardening with my grandparents because they did come out of the Great Depression. We've all heard, our generation heard thousands of stories about the Great Depression, so I'm under no illusions of what is coming. And I grew up actually gardening with my grandparents. And of course, there were Liberty Gardens and that sort of thing before our time, but it is time to go back to that. Of course, very few people are gonna be able to grow everything that they need to eat, but that's not what's important. What's important is that we all supplement enough that we reduce the burden overall and we actually have enough to eat to get through these rough times. And we can get through these. Everybody watching this, everybody listening to this has a family line that has been through a lot of wars and a lot of pandemics and a lot of famines. Every one of us came through family lines that have been through a lot of stuff, and we're still here, right? Now, there's a lot of people that aren't still here, especially the ones that didn't pay attention and prepare for rough times, squirrel away their acorns and that sort of thing. And most important is to build your human networks, which you do. Mike, you work on that a lot, building human network. Building human. When you read about famines and other times, you know, I study a lot. I've read about 80 books between famine and pandemic, 60 on pandemic and 20 on famine. And you'll see one of the things that's very important in famine is your human network, right? And the human networks, the people will say it over and over. I mean, to get through this thing, you have to have a human network that you work together, cooperate. I'm sitting here in Ireland. Obviously, they had a massive famine here in the 40s and 50, 1840s and 50s, and the population has still never recovered. Even when we're surrounded by a sea filled with fish, this place is surrounded by protein. And yet they had massive famines that caused a lot of human osmotic pressure. That's why so many Irish, of course, came to the United States. A lot of them ended up being handed a musket or a rifle and sent off to the Civil War. The thing is knowledge would have precluded much of that famine. Of course, not to get into the politics that the English helped cause the famine and that sort of thing, which is nearly always the case in famines, by the way. There's almost always a malevolent human component in famine. Some famines actually are only the result of, say, a drought or locust or something like that. But usually there's a human component. For instance, the Hungerwinter in 1944 and 45 in Netherlands, that was during World War II, of course, 44, 45. It was a very cold winter and the Nazis stop the food flow in Netherlands. And so for about 6 months, it was a pretty severe famine. The United States was parachuting in food and getting our airplanes shot down, but Swedish were trying to send in food. Finally, you know, Operation Market Garden and those other things. And our greatest generation came in and liberated the Dutch and brought a lot of food with them. But that was, of course, mostly man-made because the Nazis interrupted the food. Likewise, the Holodomor in 32-33 over in Ukraine. It was a Stalin-created famine, massive famine. And likewise over in China, Mao's famines. And of course, Mao modeled himself after Stalin. So he copied Stalin's techniques and put Chinese characteristics on them and killed tens of millions of people with famine. Famine can do a lot more destruction, believe it or not, than war can. Famine can be sort of like a neutron bomb in a sense. Keep in mind, during famine, one of the major causes of death is actually not a starving to death, it's a disease. Because, you know, most people, before they starve to death, your immune system is gonna be obviously highly compromised. You're gonna be eating things you don't normally eat. There's not gonna be electricity. There's not gonna be clean water. And people die from disease, right?
You'll have some, Michael. When people lack food, also they start to lose cognitive function and they lose the ability to make rational decisions about their own planning. And I know you've talked about that, and in all the books that you've read that you talk about with me. But let's jump to Florida, because this is another critical point. So the traditional fertilizers that are used to grow the crops that feed more than half the world include NPK, so nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Those are the three major elements, or you could say minerals in the case of two of them, that go back into the soil. that have to be there for plants to grow. Well, nitrogen, it has been cut off by sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines and also the economic sanctions against Russia that are prohibiting natural gas transactions from Gazprom. So that's, if you were to put NPK on a like a chalkboard, you can cross out the N. And also in the Netherlands, they're at war with N because they say nitrogen is a pollutant now from the animal herds. You were just there talking to those farmers. Well, now let's go to phosphorus. So the hurricane that just hit Florida took out 50% of the production of the pelletized phosphate fertilizer industry. I mean, 50% of what serves all of North America, the US and Canada. And this one company known as Mosaic also serves about 12% of the global supply. So this is an attack on not just the N, but now the P. So, I mean, if you take out two of the three minerals, plants can't grow. Now, I know you grew up in that area in Florida. What are your thoughts about what's happening with the phosphate mining industry? How long do you think they're going to be offline there in Central Florida?
All right. I was just over there at that area that just got damaged some months ago. Before I just went to Mexico, I was checked because I grew up, we used to look for shark's teeth in those phosphate pits, right? So I grew up in Winter Haven, Florida. So if you look on the map of Winter Haven versus that, it's just short drive down the road. And so I was there some months ago looking at the issues there. I think that the plant there was not damaged as badly as reported. Let's see. Hopefully it was not. I think that it was not. But let's see how this shakes out. Keep in mind, phosphate, Florida is one of the major producers in the entire world. I'm very lucky to be where I'm from. It was a citrus capital of the world and one of the phosphate capitals. Of course, Morocco, where I was last year tracking migrants and looking at other issues there. Morocco is also a huge phosphate producer. I was talking with a Moroccan recently. I said, that phosphate you guys got is worth more than your oil. It's worth more than your energy.
Yeah, good point. Right.
And likewise, China has a lot, and so does Iraq. There's other countries that have phosphate, but certainly Florida, exactly where that plant is, happens to be, well, it's a gold mine of phosphate, as it were.
Michael, apologize for interrupting. We're going to go to break. And one more segment, folks, with Michael Yon on the other side of this break. Stay with us here. This is the Alex Jones Show, fourth hour, Infowars.com. Mike Adams, we'll be right back. All right, we're continuing final segment here today with, well, war correspondent, global analyst Michael Yon. He continues with us here. I just want to bring in the complex ethical considerations of what we're talking about right now. And folks, when we talk about Mosaic, which is the company that does the phosphate fertilizer in Florida, we pray to God that Mosaic comes back online as soon as possible. We don't want to see any of these companies offline for any extended period of time, because human agriculture, human civilization depends on these corporations. But Florida's infrastructure has been hit so hard, there are going to be delays. Same thing, though, with BASF. So, you know, BASF out of Germany. If any executives or anybody that works for BASF is listening, we don't want your corporation, your chemical plants, to just suddenly fail and drop off the grid to where all of industry shuts down and nobody has any fertilizer and everybody starves to death. No, we don't want that either. We want you to continue to be able to function and keep people alive, even though there is a complex history. And Michael, I know you're familiar with this. You know, Fritz Haber, the inventor of the Haber process to make ammonia out of natural gas, I believe he was a Nazi-supporting Jew who developed not only this process that feeds half the world, but then I think in his name, his institution later on was supporting Adolf Hitler and creating the Zyklon B and trying to win the war with chemical weapons, you know, trying to win the war for the Nazis. So, this guy, his process feeds half the world, but he was also trying to use chemical weapons to kill millions of people. So these are complex issues, and you can go through history and you can argue all this, but right now, I don't want anybody to starve. Would you agree with that, Michael?
Absolutely. In fact, when he got his Nobel Prize, a lot of people did not even want to go and turn their back on his wife. Killed herself, unknown why she did
True,
that.
Yeah.
Apparently, she shot herself, and so I don't know if that was related to the things that he did. But Fritz Haber was obviously a complex man, and BASF. In a fascist country, Nazism is basically fascism plus racism, right? And so, you know, Germany was fascist plus racism, Nazism, right? And so the chemical companies like BASF and others, they made their chemicals, right? And so, and we see American companies doing that now with information operations, you know, not to name any names, but I think we know a lot of the names. In fact, they're going after Alex Jones, right? They're trying to destroy Alex Jones because all the crazy things that he said over the years turn out to be accurate. They turn out to be true. Turns out that Alex Jones has very bright headlights, and he's shining lights on a lot of these fash tech companies now, as one of my friends calls them, fash tech. And they're doing the same things that the companies, that the chemical companies did in making Zyklon B. They'll do good or they'll do evil, wherever the profit is, right? And so, but with BASF, and not just BASF, there's also Yara and other plants that make ammonia products, or nitrogen-based fertilizer products. As those one by one shut out the lights, those are shutting out the lights of humans. There just will not be enough food. Because as you know, about 4 billion people, it's believed about four, you've said this on your programs before, I've seen you, about 4 billion people are alive today because of the Haber-Bosch process, because of the ammonia, right? Because of the nitrogen-based fertilizers, which we're just not gonna have enough natural gas. And of course, China used their coal gas to make some, but they don't make enough. And besides, China's not exporting much fertilizer right now. They're very clear that they're not going to, because they've got their own problems, right? And you see, there's all these other things that are important, additive. For instance, the corn harvest this year in the United States looks, and as even as I drove across Europe, looking at the corn, it's quite brown and just not a good harvest this year. And of course, what do the chickens eat? They eat corn. Is in just basically almost everything, right? I mean, corn is one of the things you need to keep your eyes on when we're looking at food security. We have problems with
crops. Let me add in there, what the globalists are telling us is we all have to eat genetically modified corn because it's more drought resistant. So they're taking the crisis and then trying to push us into a monoculture, corporatized agriculture system where they control the intellectual property of the seeds, and they can punish farmers if they don't use their seeds and so on. So it's at every turn, the globalists are trying to enslave humanity by using food as a weapon, weather as a weapon, natural gas scarcity as a weapon, even winter as a weapon. But just in the interest of time, Michael, we've got about 5 minutes left here. I promised the audience we would talk about solutions. So could you segue into that and just start with what can individuals do to navigate this coming winter and, let's just be honest, not die, right? What can they do?
Right. Networks. First of all, work on your human networks. A friend in Texas, for instance, he's a former military man. He said he went to his church, small town in Texas, and he just took inventory of everybody at church. Like, what are your skills? And one older lady in her mid 70s, she was very worried. She's a widow. He's like, I don't have any skills. I'm worried. He's like, well, let's talk. I know you have skills. You had children and everything else. That means you ran a restaurant, that sort of thing, right? You ran an operation when you raised children and grandchildren. And he's like, what skills do you have? And she talked about canning. She knows how to can food. He says, okay, you're basically the commanding officer of our canning operations then. You will can the food. We'll bring you the things to can. What do you need? Tell me what you need. Pressure cookers, what do you need? Tell me the ones you need. Tell me the jars you need. Tell me everything you need. You will be in charge of canning, right? So making these human networks and taking a lead, being a leader at whatever level you're comfortable being a leader, take charge, whether it's two people or one person, just take charge of yourself. If you feel like that you can lead more, do that. And be a matchmaker on finding people that need certain skills and people that have certain skills, because together we're quite strong. We can get through this. There'll be some challenges, but you know, I've spent more than half my life overseas, much of that in third world countries. We can certainly get through, and most of us will. The ones who prepare and work in our networks, we'll get through this with some interesting stories to tell on the other side. So you've got a good website. For instance, I spent a lot of time on your website. You reviewed some lights, which I instantly bought. I've been looking for, you know, so listening to other people's experience is very important, because none of us know the whole story. We all know bits and pieces, so it's all about network.
Well, that's great news. I'm really glad that your optimism is emerging here. And also, you've been to many places where famine is taking place, and you've seen how people can pull together and get through this. And that's a very powerful message for this audience to say, guess what? You know, this is not an automatic death sentence. If you prepare, you can make it through this. In fact, like you said earlier, Michael, your ancestors made it through far worse. I mean, they didn't have air conditioning, for example, right? You know, they didn't have LED flashlights, and they didn't have night vision optics and really accurate, affordable rifles that can, you know, take out varmints and so on. So you've got tools now that never existed in history. And if you are smart enough to just take advantage of those tools and do the human networking, like you said, Michael, then we can all make it through this. Now, for those who are...